Welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. Host Green Diva Meg and sidekick Green Dude Scott share resources and ideas for green living as they explore fun and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green. And now, your hosts, Green Diva Meg and Green Dude Scott.
Welcome, everyone.
Mercury is retrograde, and you're with the Green Divas.
Every mechanical thing I own has been
yeah,
askew.
You really had bizarre, you know, electronic karma today.
Yeah, so I wasn't supposed to be online, I guess, just resting.
But it's nice. We have Green Diva Lisa back from
Yoo-hoo.
Her travels. And, yeah, Green Dude Scott, I think Lisa was explaining. He's not in tonight. He might call in to
that
pester
would
be us.
Right.
Yeah. But we do have a full show, as usual. We have a Green Diva correspondent report from Kat O'Brien from the beautiful Berkshires, Massachusetts. And our interview guest later will be Woody Tash, who's the author of Inquiries into the Nature of Slow Money, which is becoming a pretty serious movement.
I'm so excited to learn more about it.
Well, I think there's a lot to learn, and I think he's very passionate about it, and I'm definitely looking forward to talking to Woody. And yeah, there's just so much to catch up on, man.
Yeah.
So where the heck have you been?
Well, since I was last here, I've been down back home to Austin, Texas.
Right.
I did a workshop with some students at the Eastside Memorial Green Tech High.
Oh yeah, you were going to call in and talk about that, but I think we missed that show.
I think I had another technical glitch at that time. It was, what a really interesting school. It was a school that that was trying to be shut down by the AIS, Austin Independent School Districts, because of not having exemplary scores. They weren't scoring high enough for their test scores, so they were trying to shut it down, and they did shut it down a couple years ago. And then a group came in and divided the school up into three sections. One is the international school, which has always been there, and they teach refugees that move into Austin, and then it's a English immersion program. The other school is Global Tech, and then this Green Tech. And so what they do, which is, it's all project-based learning. We're talking about kids that may have some, you know, issues in terms of learning, but it's project learning, and they weave all of their tax requirements. That's the Texas Association for blah, 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 blah.
Oh, okay. not IRS.
Yeah, science, math, yeah, TACS. And they weave all of their requirements with math, science, English, and technology into these projects. And all the projects have to resonate with something environmental. And it's a high school program. And it is such a treat. You know, these kids, they understand that the public thinks of them as being not exemplary. And they get to pick the subject matter. We did a PSA, and their subject was all about stereotyping and how bad that can be for people.
Mm-hmm.
So we did personal stereotyping, divided in three groups, and the one group talked specifically about the stereotyping that they, as a community school, have
right.
gotten,
right.
and how
it's hurt them,
how it's hurting them, yeah, and how they want to sort of.
So did you do a doc?
We did a PSA, a public
PSA.
Service announcement,
okay. Uh-huh.
And those are, we did three public service announcements that are about 30 seconds each.
Great.
And
with the kids were part of the workshop.
They did everything. They
wow.
created the story. They figured out what they wanted to. What message they wanted to get out there.
And this is with your mobile film school.
Right.
Just so everybody knows that, you know, Lisa, when she's not being a Green Diva, is frequently, probably most of her time, really passionate about her nonprofit called the Mobile Film School, which is mobilefilmschool.org.
Correct.
All right.
We don't have those films posted yet, but we ought to be able to get those posted soon. I kind of had to dash off to Seattle to do another project.
You're just such a little, you know,
I know, it's not very good on the footprint, but I am. Seattle was great. I've been doing some project with MSN, and I got to meet some of the producers I've been working with online and haven't actually met yet. So that was really fun, and I think I'll have some fun work to do with them.
So how long, you know, I'm afraid to ask, but how long are you going to stick around this time, girly?
I don't know. It's all about finding work.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, maybe we'll get paid to do this one of these days.
I'm in. Count me in if that's the case.
Yay.
I'd love to do that. I'd love to stick around and be a... Actually, I've got big ideas if we get funding.
Yeah.
I've got big ideas.
I know you do. And we like having you around. So, you know.
I like being here. It's fun.
Well, things are kind of cranking. I just want to talk a little bit about some of the stuff that's been going on with us while you've been away. I've been busy, you know, cranking out some fun partnerships. We now have a couple of partnerships with online media sources. One is ecoseed.org.
Right on.
And they are now posting the podcast and sharing about us, and we're sharing about them.
And that's just what it sounds like. ECOSEDE. If I could spell, I would say ECOSEED.org.
Yes, you get a gold star for trying. and they, you know what I really like? Like, for instance, tonight I wanted to talk just a minute about Obama did a policy speech yesterday about energy and oil, and I wanted to find some news about it. I just went to EcoSeed. They really have a very well-organized, and it's international, although it's obviously very heavily weighted in U.S. news, but it's very well-organized, really quick. I quickly found, you know, a Reuters article there about this thing. So I just want to give a shout-out to EcoSeed. And also, yours truly, Green Diva Meg, is now a regular contributor on Care 2.
Awesome. That's CARE,
yeah,
the number two dot com.
Which I am thrilled about because I've been a fan of Care 2 I've been a member for several years. And we interviewed Randy Painter a couple of weeks ago.
You missed it.
I'm sorry.
And I really like the work they're doing because not only are they bringing information, a lot of great resources and information in a wide range of topics, which is what we do, but also they provide some very easy activism kind of platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So it's brilliant, really. So and they're, you know what I like? They're also really heavily into animal rights and pets. They got a big pet thing going.
Care too.
I miss my dogs. So, anyway, I want to give a shout-out to those two new online partners.
Yes, welcome. Check them out. They're awesome. They have great information, and we're very honored to be partnering with them.
Are you serious? I was so excited because there I am on the page with Deepak Chopra. He's one of their regular – there's lots of people there that are just amazing that I've been, you know, admiring for a long time. So it's very exciting for me to be considered – you know, a contributor among these contributors.
You're in good company, Meg.
Woohoo! Yeah, so they don't know what they're doing, but that's okay. we won't go there. No, we're having fun. So, and then I've been writing for, you know, what used to be Green Options, and now it's Important Media, several of their websites, eatdrinkbetter.com.
Mm-hmm. Because,
of course, you know, it's all about food for me, and everybody that knows me knows I love food, and you know, not as skinny as I used to be as a result, but that's okay. I love healthy food. So eatdrinkbetter.com. The other one that I write for with them is feelgoodstyle.com, which is really – that incorporates a lot of the stuff we talk about as Green Divas, you know, fashion, art, you know, culture. It does bring in a lot of aspects, beauty, you know, all that fun stuff. And today I posted something on another one of their sites called Eco Scraps, which I think is kind of a funny little name. But it's a great – because there's so many times when I'm posting that I'm like, where do I put this? You know, and so Eco Scraps.
Is that a .com or .org?
Gosh, I don't know.
Well, we'll find out.
Lisa's going there. So yeah, I did a post. I've been so, you know, you know what I need from you, Lisa?
.com.
I need ecoscraps.com. What I need is I need help posting and keeping up because I've been doing so much like business stuff. I'm not keeping up with my blogging, but this week, I gathered all these books that I have to review. The pipeline is just embarrassing. Okay, it's embarrassing.
Well, it's hard because you get a lot of things people want you to review, so it's hard to keep up with everything.
Let's put it this way: I get like 5 invitations to review books every day, yeah. At least. It's probably about 25 a week. And sometimes, and I try to, you know, I'm thinking, no, I have a pile this high, don't get any more, but I can't resist. There's some wonderful books, and I'm a book addict.
I wish I could read.
Yeah, well,
that's not my forte.
It does help. It does help, you know. And so anyway, I have about 30 books, and I'm not exaggerating, that are, you know, within the last year, I've accumulated to review.
Well, you can give me your thinnest.
Yeah,
most interesting,
I'll give you a skinny, fun
book because I'm so slow.
Well, there's some good food books that, you know, can just do some recipes.
I love
the food stuff. We're going to hook you up with that.
All
so
right.
What I did was I have them categorized, and this week I did a blog post on 5 must-read books for the eco-enlightened. And they're books that tend to, you know, talk about philosophy or environmentalism in general, or one aspect. The one book is one of the author that we're going to talk to tonight, Woody Tash, his book about slow money, Inquiries into the Nature of Slow Money. What's the tagline? Do you have it there? It's I just fell in love with this. The tagline is investing as if food, farms, and fertility mattered.
I love it.
Yeah,
it's so overdue. I can't wait to hear him talk about this, and I can't wait to have a better understanding of it myself.
It really speaks to me. So that's, you know, there's a couple. What other books did I do? Oh, one of the greatest interviews we did was with a woman in Canada who wrote a book called Sleeping Naked is Green. And you probably missed that. And we didn't record that interview, so I've got to have her back.
No, but I practice it.
Yeah, I do too, but you know, probably TMI, right?
Hey, by the way, Megan, you're on the top of the page and under activism.
Really?
Green Divas recommend 5 must-read books.
Under what page? Where are you?
In EcoScraps.
Oh, yeah. I'm so cool. So, anyway, what book? That one was Sleeping Naked is Green, and it's a hilarious story, but it's also really... Talk about what this woman did was just she did a journal, and she was going to do one new green thing every day for 365 days. You think to yourself, oh, that's no big deal. You know, like day 6, she was freaking out. You know, it's very funny. It's a funny book, and I just picked a random day that got my attention.
That sounds
July
like a fun
3rd,
one.
Day 125, shower in the dark. Why? I have never taken a shower in the dark before. It's the perfect way to wake up while still denying the existence of daylight and all forthcoming responsibility. I thought, yeah. No, she's a very funny woman, and her journey is actually very enlightening. Then I did 4 Fish, which is kind of scary. That's the future of the last wild food, and then this guy tracks 4 fish that most of us are familiar with and eat: salmon, sea bass, cod, and tuna.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so some of these are you know, a little scary, but informative and important because, you know, sustainable wild fish is an issue, and boy, there are lots of issues in there.
Yeah.
Hope Beneath Our Feet was one of my favorite books, and that's a compilation of essays of many people: Paul Hawken, Barbara Kingsolver, Bill McKibben, Michael Pollan, you know, just to name a few. Who are answering the question, in a time of environmental crisis, how can we live right now? It's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some really fabulous answers. And what I found is most of them are very uplifting and solutions-based and hopeful rather than, you know, we're all doomed. Which I think is how a lot of us feel. We can get overwhelmed really easily when you get into the news and the doom and gloom, you know, of Japan and nuclear, you know, fallout and radiation garbage. It's a bummer, but we don't dwell there. And then the other one is Plastic: A Toxic Love Story.
Yeah.
which is really great. And we're going to interview Susan Frankel. Boy, I don't know how to pronounce her name. I haven't figured that out.
I think you got it right.
Yeah.
Frankel.
Yeah. Very good book. Very, very well written, detailed, and shocking. You know, and you and I have been doing a lot about plastic with our interview with Bag Monster Andy Keller and my attempt. Were you around when I did the plastic-free February nightmare?
No.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that another time. But yes,
that.
It was a stunner.
It's very difficult to get away from plastic.
It's impossible. Let me just say that. It's impossible. And I thought I was really good. And I think we have Kat on the phone. Okay.
All right.
Green Diva Kat up in the Berkshires.
Hello there, Green Diva Meg. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. How is it up there? I know we're about to get snow. Are you getting hammered?
Well, we don't see it yet, but it's very, very misty out there, so it looks like it shall be coming soon.
Do you think it's a big April Fool's joke that the weather people all got together and decided to mess with us?
They're calling it an April Fool's storm.
Well, they're calling it the April Fool's storm, but I think that it's nature's joke about it.
Yeah. Nanny, nanny, boo-boo.
Oh,
sorry to say.
It's just not right. I don't mind. I actually like snow.
Yeah, it won't stick for long. That's what I keep telling myself. And you know, the worst is behind us. All those feet of snow.
Well, yeah.
And you're now looking in at mud season, right?
Mud season is coming up. Yep. April is mud season up here, and I got a touch of it when it thawed last week. I went up into the hills, up into Beckett. My daughter was up there, and, ooh, those clay roads were like jelly.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
fun.
Just a taste of mud season.
A little preview, man.
Yeah.
So what else green is going on up there in the Berkshires?
Well, I'm thinking of, you know, planting my... I'm right in the middle of Pittsfield here, so they have to be very inventive, and I have even less space in this place than I did in the last place, but I was very pleased with what I did over there. You know, I had about a 6-foot by 30-foot space, and I managed to get, you know, herbs and lots of flowers and even vegetables and a 200-gallon fish pond in the back there.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I remember. You're an amazing gardener.
Yeah, and so I'm not going to have a fish pond here. I may use one of those little whiskey barrel liners, which I'm thinking about, but I've been growing some things on my rooftop, and I've got some chives appearing in one of my pots on the roof. It's really exciting.
Happy chives.
Yeah, there's nothing on the ground downstairs yet, but I'm going to add some more herbs this year and do a lot of container stuff.
Well, you're an urban gardener there.
I am, and proud of it.
Darn proud of it.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of some of the nice things things I love to grow that I usually grow. And one of the things is really easy is Johnny jump ups. You know,
oh, yes.
Everybody knows those, and you know they're great because they come back and they reseed. You know, if you get the hardy variety. But the other thing about them, you know, besides being beautiful, is that they're edible and decorative. And
edible? I didn't know that.
They are edible.
Well, I'll be darned.
They are, and you know that they are the parent of our cultivated pansies. They're called the wild pansy is one of their names, or the heart peas. And they just are so lovely. I mean, they always make me happy, and I use them to decorate, like if I have a dessert.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I have a dessert, or I have a cake, and I've, you know, people are just amazed. It's beautiful. I mean, you wouldn't think. I use like raspberries or strawberries, and I use some like lemon verbena leaves or mint leaves, and use those to decorate with the flowers.
I add nasturtiums when I use the Johnny jump ups because the color together is so brilliant.
I know it is beautiful, and those are nice edibles too. And the other thing that I like to do is I'll press them, and sometimes I'll put them in a note to somebody, or you know, use them as part of a little gift thing for people. So I'm looking forward. I don't have them. I'm not growing them here yet, but they're going to be added this year.
Now, and those are early spring. They come right after crocuses, kind of thing.
Yeah, they come a little later. They're like mid-May or a little bit later. But the thing is, I always buy some of the, you know, not the hardy ones, but I always buy some of the other ones and stick them in because you can have an early color, you know, you get that choice.
Yeah.
So I use those too besides, you know, the perennial one. And another thing I'm looking forward to having, I used to have it all over my old garden, was lemon balm.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've used that at all. It's a bit of a spreader, but I just pull out the extra and hang it up, and it's great for tea. And it's also, I didn't know this before, but it can be used as an insect repellent if you just, you know, break off a few of the tender leaves and rub them on your skin.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess you could pull them up and hang them around your porch and keep bugs away as well.
Yep, that's what they say. And another thing that I thought was really interesting, I love the, you know, the folklore, that, you know, the ancient stories about these things. And they said that in ancient times that it was planted by your front door to drive away evil spirits.
Lemon balm?
Lemon balm.
No kidding.
Yeah, so I thought, oh, what a perfect thing to grow around your house. I know they say that about tansy, because tansy also supposed to ward off ants, although it's a bit, you know, you can't let animals eat it, and some people it does give them a rash, but lemon
well, there's that. Now, does lemon balm, is it a mosquito repellent? That's what I'm always looking for.
It's supposed to be.
Okay.
And I don't know how really strong it is, but, you know, I'd like to use something really natural. I thought, well, I'm going to get some and give it a try and just see how good it is. Because, you know, it smells in a way like citronella. And from what I read, they use lemon balm with, you know, lemon oil, citronella. Use those as a blend together for it.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kat is also an herbalist, and we could probably talk for hours about all this fun stuff. Now, do you use seeds to get all this going? And are you, like, doing that now, or do you plant plants?
Well, I do a variety of things, and what I've started doing since I've become, I call myself, you know, a guerrilla city gardener, because when you live in a city and you're in an apartment, you can't really have boundaries, so that if you're making a garden, you have to, you know that all, you know, it could, you know, if you've got it in pots or if you've got it in the ground, it can be stomped on, it can be pulled out, it can be taken away. So I always try to, like, do kind of the recycle-free thing first and then buy later. And
right.
My daughter, you know, my daughter's a horticulturalist.
Oh, okay.
And so she gets cast-off things, and she said, Mom, before you buy anything, you know, wait and see, you know, what I get from my garden.
I love that. I have a couple of friends that we share plants, you know, every
seeds
year.
As well.
Yeah, seeds and plants, and mm-hmm. I'm not as good at doing the seeds in the spring.
I do have a little box of seeds that you gave me for Christmas one year.
Those are my morning glory seeds. Boy, did we get the morning glories, huh, Jess?
Oh, those are beautiful.
Yeah, they were prolific.
Yeah, those
So
are amazing.
I just started harvesting
the
seeds.
You did well with those.
Yeah, I know.
Those can be hard to get to go. Did you nick the seeds and soak them first?
Yep.
Wonderful.
Yep, and now they're just, I don't plant seeds anymore because they're just crazy wild all over my yard.
That's great. That's one of the benefits, yeah. So, you know, one of the things is shisho, the thing that they use to color the ume plums. It's called oriental basil.
Oh.
And it's this amazing plant that grows. I had it growing 3.5 feet tall in my other garden, my other little tiny garden. And the leaves are this deep, rich burgundy color that have almost like this coppery sheen underneath.
And they use that to make ume plum paste?
Yeah, and it's like semi-citrusy, but it also has like this rich flavor to it. And they use it a lot, like in Thai, and, you know,
yep,
Thai cooking.
Right. Yep.
And so I didn't bring those plants with me when I moved. So this year, those I have seeds.
Oh, that's
and cool. I'm going to put those in.
You got Jessie's attention. She's addicted to ume plum.
Uh huh.
And ume plum paste.
And oh, you should try to find it. It's shisho or perilla. Perillo. Lla. And it's just the most beautiful plant. I mean, the plant on its own. And it's growing. Like in the late summer, you've got these beautiful giant plants, and
love it.
They feel cooling. You know, they're just They're lovely.
Well, that's what we need. Well, we've got me interested now. I'm all psyched to go out and start thinking about planning. Of course, I think I might be moving this summer, so I'm like, I don't know. Do I, you know, pots. I can do pots, right? I can do pots.
Do you remember my roof deck in Philadelphia?
Yeah. Lisa had the most beautiful roof deck when she lived in Philadelphia. It was very inspiring.
I did all pot, planted everything in pots. It was like a jungle up there.
It was.
Yes, well, that's what I did in my place because, you know, I was renting and I wanted to be able to take with me whatever, you know, I wanted to take.
Right.
And so I put everything in pots because if it goes into the ground, then it's owned by the owner of the land. You know, that's the legalities of it.
Yep.
And you would be amazed at things that you can grow in pots. I was growing oriental lilies and daylilies and hosta. And I was even growing these giant canna lilies that were just, that's a really fun thing to grow because they will grow huge and they don't need, you know, they need a decent sized pot, but they don't need like a huge pot. And you can get this jungle looking plant by midsummer with these beautiful blossoms. And I think that's one of the most important things when you have a city garden is to have as much green as possible.
Absolutely.
So I like things like the cannas, and I, you know, I'm hoping that I'll, you know, somebody will have some cast off hosta like I've done before, and I put those in pots and you know, situate those around.
Oh, I've got lots of those. Maybe I'll drive them up to you.
Sure.
Well, I'm inspired, and I hope some of our listeners are inspired as well. Now, we'll have to check in next time, see how your garden's doing. Maybe I'll get to visit in between.
Oh, that'd be great.
Thank you for calling, Kat. We'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Good to hear from you, Kat.
Okay.
Take care.
Yep, bye-bye.
It is inspiring to talk. I think sometimes when winter feels like this, or spring, when it feels like it's about to snow, when you start talking about plants, it's very exciting. It's warming. I actually feel warmer.
Yes.
Isn't that weird?
I think it's probably a fever. But
well, there's that and the heat behind me that's making all kinds of scary noises.
No, I love talking about gardening, and I haven't done a lot of gardening. That was my last big garden, was the roof deck garden.
Yeah, I remember that. It was very inspiring.
Yeah, I was in a house for about 3 months, and I actually... It was a whole overgrown garden. The grass was taller than me, and I was about to tear it all out and plant stuff, and I decided I'd look, you know, and I sort of pulled the grass away, and I found all these
plants.
Herbs and plants, even pepper plants and stuff.
Wow.
So I managed to clean around it and then add more to it, and for a three-month period of time, of course, I was in Austin, Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
I had some real gardening. I had a little bit of my garden
fix.
Yeah,
you're good at that. Well, I think we should listen to a couple of tunes, have some fun for a few minutes, relax, and then we'll come back and we're going to talk to Woody Tash.
Like the music? You're listening to a podcast, you won't be able to hear it.
Sorry.
To hear Green Diva tunes, you have to listen every Thursday night from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now more from Green Diva Meg and Green Dude Scott.
Welcome back to the Green Divas Radio Hour. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
And Green Diva Lisa.
And just to, you know, kind of quickly do our shameless plugging, because we got to do that, please find us on Facebook and like us. We need it. I need it. You know, my
gosh,
fragile ego.
No, but no, it helps us.
It does help, and we appreciate it. So if you look, just search for Green Diva Radio Show, you'll find us. Our website is thegreendivas.com, all spelled out, thegreendivas.com. And you can follow me at Green Diva Meg on Twitter. And I had fun with some folks on Twitter today. There's a gentleman named Drew Westfall, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, from Georgia, who's heard that we saw my tweet about our upcoming guest tonight and has a question for Woody. So I love that. Interactivity. It's so much fun. So let me just read. I want to read Woody's bio here, so because there's a lot. This guy's got some deep background in socially responsible investing, and I want to just read his bio here. Woody Tash is the founder and chairman of Slow Money, a 501c3 nonprofit formed in 2008 to catalyze the flow of investment capital to small food enterprises and to promote new principles of fiduciary responsibility to support sustainable agriculture and the emergence of a restorative economy. I like that term, restorative economy. I want to ask him about that. T- Tash is Chairman Emeritus of Investors Circle, a nonprofit network of investors that has facilitated the flow of $134 million to 200 sustainably minded early stage companies and venture funds. Relevant Times was, you know, we pitched them. We didn't get money, but, you know, they were very cool people back in the day. For most of the 1990s, Woody was treasurer of the Jesse Smith Noyes Foundation, where he pioneered mission-related investing. He is an experienced venture capital investor and entrepreneur. Hey, I wonder if he wants to invest in the Green Divas radio show. I got to talk to this guy. He has served on numerous for-profit and non-profit boards and was founding chairman of the Community Development Venture Capital Alliance, which supports venture investing in economically disadvantaged regions. In 2010, Utney Reader named Woody one of the 25 visionaries who are changing your world. His new book, Inquiries into the Nature of Slow Money, is published by Chelsea Green. So, that's the 411 on our interview guest, who hopefully will be calling any minute. I don't know what time zone he's in, but every once in a while we run into the time zone thing where, I'm usually pretty clear. I say 7:40 p.m. EST.
Right. I've been terrible about.
Well, you've
time
been
zone.
In like how many time zones in the last week?
A few.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I'm very dyslexic about getting it right in terms of what time it is.
Yeah.
In the different places that I'm.
Well, you know, the guys that run EcoSeed. Are in Hong Kong, and they're very accommodating because it's very confusing for me. Talk about, I'm like, what time? What day is it over there, man? I'm very bad at that.
Mm-hmm.
I see the phone flashing. I'm thinking it's Woody.
Well, I communicate a lot with friends in Australia, and I'm just I can never get it right.
I know they're a day ahead or a day behind. I can't remember, but
14 hours or something.
Yeah. Okay. Woody Tash, founder and chairman of Slow Money on the line. Hello, Woody.
Hi, Meg.
How are you?
I'm good.
Thank you so much for taking the time to call us. You must be a very busy man.
Oh, well, I don't know about that, but thanks for having me.
That's right. It doesn't necessarily flow with the whole slow money concept that you would be not balanced about your time there, right?
I'm just pretending.
Where do you live, Woody?
I live in New Mexico.
Oh, okay. We were trying to guess time zones.
Oh, I've done some time in New Mexico, in Taos and Albuquerque. What's the big town? Everybody.
Santa Fe.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I was having like a little mind freeze there. Love it there. Okay, I'm jealous, but.
Yeah, it's a nice part of the world.
Good for you. Well, we're over it. So I kind of read your bio, so to really get an understanding of where you've come from with all this, but I really want to hear from you how this slow money thing came about.
Well, do you want to hear my whole life story? I don't think so.
But I'm sure it's involved.
Well, yeah, I've just been... I've had to reflect on this a lot over the last couple of years as this thing has gained some momentum and people kind of want to trace its roots and whatnot. And it's not that complicated, really. If someone grew up in the 60s and 70s, you know, I was in college in the late 60s and early 70s, and I think just it became a young adult at a time when we were questioning everything and just had the feeling that we weren't really finding answers. We had a lot of questions, but we didn't have any answers, and just kind of stubbornly stuck at it in different ways. I mean, my career's had all kinds of little twists and turns in venture capital and philanthropy, and working as a social entrepreneur, starting a few nonprofits and whatnot. So I, from a career standpoint, I've done various pieces of it, but I just kept wondering why we weren't getting at some of the root problems, and then luckily I had a chance to take a year off several years back from my work at Investor Circle, and I wrote the book, and you know, once I had a chance to really pause and reflect and put it all together, well, I shouldn't say put it all together, because of course it's still a work in progress, but
right.
I think at least asking some of the right questions got us kind of heading in the right direction.
Well, I'm very inspired by the whole concept, and I love that you've really tied it in, you know, with the slow food concept.
Mm-hmm. Slow food is really it's a beautiful movement, and it gets tagged a little bit in the U.S. with being elitist, and there are definitely issues there. I mean, it's like any social change, figuring out, like, where it's going to start. You know, where it starts isn't necessarily where it ends up, and I think at its roots, slow food is a really radical new way of looking at our relationship to nature, using food as the kind of vehicle, and just questioning, you know, once you, if you just say fast food and then slow food, you say fast money and slow money, it just leads you in so many, you know, so many of the right directions. Mm-hmm. And I just find what slow food does to be, you know, incredibly inspiring.
Well, I agree, and I love the tagline of the book. It speaks to me, investing as if food, farms, and fertility mattered. And that leads me to, you know, the potential reader into that this, what you're doing is really about bringing it home and helping to create solid local economies that are, you know, based on feeding ourselves in a sustainable manner.
Yeah, the more I've done this, the more basic it gets, because it's very easy to get, or it's not, you know, it's natural to immediately go to, okay, how are we going to do it, and is it debt or is it equity, and are we creating loan funds, is it microfinance? Everyone always wants to get right into the technical, like, how's it going to work?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that it's going to work a whole bunch of different ways. I mean, that's a whole bunch of discussions. But the basic thing, you know, when you say, you know, investing as a food, farms, and fertility matter, I've just become more and more amazed, the more we've talked about this, how simple the basic idea is. It's, and at its root, it's basically saying, if you think we're going to get a good world, we're going to come out with a happy outcome by all of us sending our money to people we don't know, to invest in things we don't understand, located in places we've never been and don't even know where they are on the map. I mean, if you think that's a way to build a healthy world economy, then you should keep your money exactly where it is. And, you know, very few people, when confronted with it that way, will go, yeah, I'll sign up for that. That sounds good. And then the alternative is, what would be the opposite? The opposite would be taking our money and only putting it into things that we understand, you know, say, near where we live, and things that make our community healthier.
Well,
but, of course, we don't know how to do that because the economy doesn't quite, I mean, of course, and then you have to say the economy isn't set up to work that way. But it needs to go back. But it needs to go back in that direction. This is not, you know, we're not going to abandon the other economy. But once you frame it that way, you just get everyone to turn around a little bit and face in the opposite direction. Say, let's just take a few steps in this other direction.
Well, it must be. I mean, the culture is ripe for this kind of thinking and the rethinking and the, you know, because we're just coming off of this horrendous economic, I don't even know what you want to call it. You know, disaster.
No, it's good that you don't know what to call it, because no one knows what it really was.
Yeah, what was that mess?
It was, I would say it was a shot across the bow, or it was an earthquake. Maybe it was an earthquake. Maybe what that wasn't followed by a tsunami, but it was, you know, it definitely, if you look at what happened and what was said about it by many of the really smart financiers at the time, it is very clear that no one's in control anymore. You know, the economy has become so complicated and so interconnected,
mm-hmm.
that, and so fast. You remember about, I don't know when it was 6 or 9 months ago that we had the 1,000-point drop in the Dow in 20 minutes?
Yeah, right. Talk about fast.
This is just, the system is prone to collapse and extreme volatility. And a lot of really smart people, it's, you know, you don't have to be radical economists to know that.
Yeah.
But what the alternative is hard to discern if you're inside that system. If you just stay in there, then you just kind of, you know, they say insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, hoping for a different outcome.
Right.
That's kind of what we're all doing with our money. It's just like, well, somehow we didn't collapse. Maybe it'll never collapse. Let's just kind of keep our head down and hope for a different outcome. But I think in our hearts we all know that that's not really the right thing.
It has been stunning to me how many economists don't understand what happened. And still can't really explain it, and I think some of it is that kind of myopic, they're in it, they can't see it. But I want to digress real quick because I want to include one of our listeners, Drew Westfall in Georgia, wrote to me on Twitter when he heard that I was going to have you on the show, and this may be completely off the trail, but I want to honor his request because I think it's valid, and he's interested to hear what you have to say about Monsanto.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, sorry about that.
That's all right.
It's a big one.
Well, my basic answer is that I'll speak for myself. I don't really speak for, I mean, there's a lot of people involved in Slow Money now, but I don't try to speak for everybody. It's more of a movement, and it's more of letting every person find, you know, decide what they believe and act accordingly. And so I'd say for me, I believe it's more productive to invest in the new thing that we want to create rather than trying to fight the entrenched things that we don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, that's thing one.
Well, there's some solution-based thinking.
Well, but I really believe that because it's like, you know, saying Wall Street is broken, Washington is broken, you know, Monsanto and Walmart and Gates, and you can, like, everyone likes to have their favorite scapegoat, who, you know, someone who's promoting the thing that they don't like. And, you know, I have I'm no fan of GMOs, for sure. I'm very skeptical of them. Like, I tend to think of GMOs as being the derivatives of agriculture, meaning, you know, they're developed by technicians to sort of trick Mother Nature to try to squeeze more return out of a field, you know, et cetera, et cetera. They're technological fixes when I think what we need is more biologically sound behavior, not more complicated technological
fixes. Better strategy,
fixes.
Yeah.
And whenever we try to fix something with technology or, let's say, financial cleverness, we end up sort of pushing the problems out to a point when we get a collapse. That's what derivatives did.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm no fan of GMOs, and I am I'm very concerned about where they might be leading us on all kinds of areas, but I don't spend a lot of time advocating against this company or that. I'd much rather just see us creating more a larger number of small, diverse food enterprises at the local level. And I think no matter, you know, who's right about GMOs, I don't think anybody can say we'll be worse off if we have more diversified small food enterprises in our local communities. I mean, we need that no matter what, so I'd rather focus there.
Yeah, and even if it's that you're coming from a security, you know, issue or an economic issue, there are a lot of arguments that, I mean, it's hard to argue against it, really.
Right. That's, I mean, talk about the concept of balance. It's very easy to get into either-or arguments. So if you want to attack GMOs and say GMOs are, you know, promoted by corrupt corporations who want to patent all life and control it to profit maximizing, that'd be the way to say it in the most negative way. Then you have an enemy you can argue against. But I think it's much more productive and better to just talk about balance. What we need is less either-or thinking, less arguing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same thing in politics. You know, we're all arguing with each other like black and white, and it's ridiculous. What we need is balance. So if you look at it in the food system, if we're heading towards consolidation and monoculture and we're losing biodiversity, what we need is a large number of small things closer to home. And it just makes sense on every level, even if, to your point, it's just a safety net. Even if it's just a safety net and it's not like a whole new direction, I still think that's good enough for me at the moment, because right now we're like 99.9% of our dollars are going towards technological, industrial, global, consolidated everything. It's not just in the food system. So...
One of the things that you come up against if you're trying to get it back to local is the farm subsidies. And I just heard an article this morning about all of these Tea Party members and other members of Congress that are getting a lot of money. You know, they're really hammering away how they're going to reduce the budget, and then they're collecting money on subsidies, which is really manipulating the market.
Well, again, this is to me, we can have endless discussions at that scale. In other words, to me, nothing works. This is just this may be one of the reasons that impelled me in this direction. Nothing works when it gets too big and too consolidated and too institutional. So, you know, a foundation doesn't work that well when it's big. Government doesn't work that well when it's big. A company doesn't work that well when it's big. No one really understands. You know, that's why you can have the board of directors of a company like Enron that didn't really even understand what the business is.
Sure.
And you can have... I'll leave people unnamed, but you can have, you know, former Treasury Secretaries of the United States who are chairman of the executive committees of major banks who get paid, you know, tens of millions of dollars a year, and then when questioned about the basic operation of the bank, they don't know what's going on.
It's
just too big. So I don't even want to, you know, I basically want out because I don't really understand it any better than anybody else. I'd rather do something that I understand.
When you pare it down locally, there's a consciousness. I mean, I drive on Route 83 from Austin, Texas to South Dakota every year. I'm on that road for 2 years. It's basically a farm road.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been doing it for almost 10 years now. And every year that I go through these little towns, they seem more boarded up, and I can't get a healthy meal. These are farm communities.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I can't get a healthy a green bean that isn't out of a Cisco can.
Yep.
And how do you change that? How do you enlighten, or what's?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's hard.
Sorry.
I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about, because I've been to many, many of those towns, and I have the same reaction. You know, it's like you're in a place where the land is being used as an industrial resource to grow monocultures for export.
Right.
And so you see that there's nothing that's grown for local consumption. There's no.
Right.
So I know exactly what you mean, and it's very disheartening. But I think I don't have an answer to that other than to say our job at Slow Money is not to try to, I mean, we can't change everything all at once, and we're not trying to, let's say, drive up the driveway of an industrial, you know, let's say someone who's growing GMO corn and try to convince them to be an organic farmer and sell to a totally different way. Our job is to just give permission to what I believe is a few million people out there who are participating in their hearts in the same conversation we're having right now, wishing we could start moving in a different direction. We want to just try to connect those people with a lot of the small food entrepreneurs and startup organic farmers around the country who are starting to create the enterprises that will manifest this, and we're trying to connect them.
So
let that network evolve organically, and then begin to create some products and services that can build that marketplace. So it's more like going where the energy is rather than trying to push rope into places where that aren't ready for change yet.
So we got to sort of wrap up, but I just wanted to solidify that what Slow Money as an organization is doing is helping connect farmers and people that want to farm responsibly and create these strong local systems with investors that care and are willing to get into this new philosophy of slow money investing.
Yeah, I'm really pleased to be able to say that in 9 communities, it's probably more than that now. I mean, it's almost not quite every day we hear about it, but it almost feels that way. In 9 places, groups of people have started doing slow money investing. And it's interesting, Austin, you mentioned Austin. Austin, the investing hasn't started yet, but there's been a whole bunch of planning and meetings. There's a lot of momentum there. I'm sure the investing will start soon.
Yeah.
But in Pittsboro, North Carolina, Portland, Oregon, Boston, Western Massachusetts.
In the Berkshires, of course. Yeah.
Berkshires, Boulder, Colorado, and one or two others. People have started making Maine, I should say, is very robust activity, Central Maine.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's on the local level. And then once a year, we're bringing people together in national events that are starting to scale a little bit. The next one's going to be October 12th to 14th in San Francisco. And so these are events and networks through which small food entrepreneurs can find people who want to invest in them.
So it's really only about small food enterprises and people like who have really cool green media enterprises, maybe like the Green Divas.
we're focused on the food part, but I mean, you bring it up in a playful way. But we get asked a lot, you know, could the same ideas apply for, let's say, sustainable, for renewable energy and other forms of sustainable businesses? And the answer is, of course, we're kind of raising the question about taking some of your money and taking it out of the fast money world and putting it to work near where you live and things that make your communities better. And we're starting with food because we didn't say the word soil fertility in this conversation, but we use it a lot in Slow Money as both a literal and a metaphorical thing. It's if we can't grow food in a way that leaves the soil as fertile or more fertile than we found it, where are we going to end up? And everybody knows the answer to that question. So, but it's not just about the soil, it's about the soil of the economy. So,
what a beautiful summation there. That's perfect.
So if you want to join the Slow Money movement, you can go to slowmoney.org.
You can, absolutely. There's a lot of different ways you can participate. You can sign the Slow Money Principles, which is a little one-statement, little kind of statement of mission and principles. You can join the Slow Money Alliance if people want. I'll let people look on there. There's a resource guide to places you can start investing right now if you want. And I would just let people know it's still early and we're small, but we're growing, and people should just kind of stay tuned and watch us as we start.
Well, and get the darn book because it's really inspiring, and I love the work you're doing.
Thank you for saying that. It's been very gratifying to see you know, what a conversation the book has started.
Well, I hope we'll talk again because the things will evolve and there's lots more to talk about. Thanks for calling so much, Woody.
Okay, thanks for having me on.
All right, talk
Thank
to
you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, all right, bye.
Wow, I got to talk to him all night long.
Oh, man.
We've burned up an hour. We're like, in a, well, we started late, so we're okay. But we do have to say goodnight. Now, we have a great show next week. What the heck do I have going on next week? Gosh, where's my list? I'm all discombobulated.
Rescheduled, you had the Green Card
Dude.
Oh,
yeah. I just want to remind everybody that Green Card Dude, John Volker, who's a senior editor of High Gear Media, will be on April 21st, which is essentially our Earth Day thing, show, and he's got some special stuff going on from the New York Auto Show that we'll look forward to.
Oh,
next great. Week, we have a woman named Cece Coffey, who's the founder of Natural Body Spa's shop. I believe she's in Georgia also. We spoke about our listener in Georgia tonight. But she's also on the board of Green Spa Network, so that ought to be kind of fun. Anyway,
yes.
We have all kinds of stuff coming up, our schedule, our archives, our podcasts. Please check it all out at thegreendivas.com. Have a great green week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Hour. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, follow them on Facebook and Twitter, and don't forget to visit thegreendivas.com.